You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
Yeah! The Rough Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, January 1st, 2021, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the new year. Happy New Year to everyone out there. We are just shivering here in our little abode next to the fire, looking out over the snowy landscape here on the Idaho-Oregon border for the last time, as I am moving from the city of Ontario on here on the border to a little further inland, as it were, into the state of Idaho, about 30 miles to the city of Caldwell, Idaho, the county seat of Canyon County, where I was born, moving there to establish residency so that I can be a more active part of the campaign to legalize marijuana in 2022 in America's last absolute prohibition state. Recorded an interview with some local news stations in Boise and a local news station in Idaho Falls this week, and I'm just bound and determined to get my name on that legalization petition and to fight to end adult marijuana prohibition in my home state. I hope you'll join me all throughout this year and the next, and of course, we could always use some financial support. Log on to my Patreon page at patreon.com/radicalruss and make a donation today. That'll get you the podcast listing for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, as well as the daily cannabis headline news, and my new podcast I'm launching today, the Cannabis Headline News Week, where I'll run down the latest stories in marijuana for the past week or so. So check that out coming up next on this podcast. But today's podcast is mostly dedicated to the people that we lost in 2020, marijuana activists who passed away, who left a lasting impact on reform. You'll hear some audio from them as well, as I got to record a number of these people. So coming up in hour one, we're going to hear from legendary Team Green Avenger, cannabis grower and breeder, Subcool, who passed away in February. We'll also hear from Dr. Lester Grinspoon, the author of Marijuana Reconsidered, who passed away a day after his 92nd birthday this year. And then in hour two, we're going to hear from NBA veteran Cliff Robinson, the founder of the Uncle Spliffy brand, who passed away this year. Kevin Zeiss, a former Normal executive director, who passed away this year. And sadly, a man who was murdered, a very good friend of mine, Jewel Stobbs, one half of the Dacha couple from South Africa, who was senselessly killed in outside of Johannesburg this year. Plus, we'll do a little retrospective on Charlotte Feige and Dan Baum and others who passed away during the year 2020. And then we'll wrap things up with my radical rant, looking back at the top stories of 2020 and what they mean for the future of marijuana law reform in the United States of America and beyond. It's going to be an amazing year coming up, 2021 and 2022, as I believe we'll see the last vestiges of prohibition fade away. I think the Democrats can take these special elections next week, and that the Senate can pass marijuana legalization as we move into the next Congress. And I'm pretty sure that President Joe Biden will sign it, making up for all of the devastation he did in the drug war throughout the 80s and 90s. That's all coming up on the Russ Belleville Show and Toker Talk Radio. We'll also have a little bit of my cannabis comedy as well. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Tell everyone you know. I can be found everywhere online as Radical Russ.
Coming this fall on Fox.
Season 4 is full of surprises.
From the people who brought you The Masked Singer.
Are you following me, Nick?
No. And the new hit follow-up show, The Masked Dancer.
Make no mistake, you can dance.
Comes the newest show to combine America's love of guessing who's behind a mask.
I told you I had a feeling about this one.
And America's favorite legal drug.
You have some swag.
Tune in Friday, Fridays at 4:20 for The Masked Stoner.
Who are you?
Only on Fox.
Hey, celebrities. Just kidding. It's legal now. You don't have to hide it anymore.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you every weekday by Radical Russ Radio at RadicalRuss.com, your 24-hour source for marijuana music and cannabis conversations. Subscribe today for just $4.20 at patreon.com/RadicalRuss.
With your Cannabis Headline News for the week ending Friday, January 1st, 2021, I'm Russ Belville. Two bills that would legalize marijuana possession and establish a regulated market are being held up in the New Jersey legislature due to concerns from Governor Phil Murphy.
Yeah, there's some important, when I say technical, but important things we're trying to wrinkle out on the decrim bill.
The decriminalization bill, as written, would eliminate criminal penalties for the possession of up to 6 ounces of marijuana. Murphy wants that bill amended to provide penalties for minors who are found in possession, similar to New Jersey laws on alcohol possession. Murphy wants to sign the decriminalization and the regulation bills at the same time. Regardless of Murphy's action or inaction, legalization of the possession of 1 ounce by adults goes into effect under the state constitution on January 1st, Marijuana Moment reports. An amendment added at the last minute to the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act threatens to sabotage the goals of repairing the devastation of minority communities wrought by the drug war, according to social equity advocates. The amendment adds a requirement of a federal permit for state legal marijuana businesses, which can be suspended or revoked if a person has a past or current legal proceeding related to a felony violation of any state or federal cannabis law. Minority Cannabis Business Association Vice President Calico Castile told Marijuana Moment that part of the intent of the MORE Act is to, quote, ensure those most impacted by cannabis prohibition would have access to the legal cannabis industry, end quote. Bill sponsor Representative Earl Blumenauer explained that the new language was inserted shortly before the floor vote, with no time to remove it. Quote, the MORE Act contains a provision that is contrary to our legislative intent, end quote, Blumenauer wrote in the Congressional Record, vowing that the addition will be stricken from the bill at the Congress's next opportunity. Speaking with Vice News, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker weighed in on the importance of next month's runoff elections in Georgia for two U.S. Senate seats.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're in Georgia right now, you will control whether weed gets legalized or not.
Senator Booker is referring to bills, including the MORE Act, that would end federal marijuana prohibition. While the Democratic House has moved forward on these bills, they languish and die in the Republican-held Senate. Democratic wins in the Georgia races would tilt control of Congress to the Democrats.
We have had not a war on drugs or a war on pot in this country. We've had a war on people, disproportionately black and brown people.
Senator Booker notes that he has never used marijuana, but calls on people who do to remain vigilant about fixing the harms of the drug war post-legalization.
Don't just sit there and say, I got mine, it's legal now, and not give a crap about the justice urgencies of this issue of expunging records.
A study published in the journal JAMA Psychiatry found that about half of the subjects who used hemp-derived CBD oil for 1 month tested positive for THC metabolites. Quote, it is often assumed individuals using hemp-derived products will test negative for THC, wrote researchers. Our results indicate this may not be true, underscoring the potential for adverse consequences, including loss of employment and legal or treatment ramifications, despite the legality of hemp-derived products, end quote. The 14 adults tested were using a hemp-derived CBD oil that provided an average daily dose of almost 35 milligrams of CBD to less than 1 milligram of THC. After 4 weeks, THC was detected in urine screens of 7 participants. The CBD product used in the test had an effective 0.02% THC by weight. By U.S. law, CBD products may have THC as high as 0.3% or 15 times more THC. The federal omnibus bill to fund the government contains a provision to eliminate the practice of disqualifying students from receiving federal aid due to a drug conviction. The Higher Education Act was passed in 1966 under President Lyndon Johnson. In 1998, Section 484R was added, banning students from receiving Pell Grants, federally backed student loans, and other federal forms of student assistance if convicted of a drug crime. Its creation and the resulting devastation to students' lives were important factors in the founding of Students for Sensible Drug Policy. The omnibus spending bill simply strikes that section.
We also need to reform our nation's drug laws, legalize cannabis, stop locking people up for nonviolent drug-related offenses.
As partisan control of the U.S. Senate hangs on the results of two Georgia Senate runoff elections, Marijuana Moment reports that Democratic candidate John Ossoff is touting marijuana legalization as one reason to vote for the Democrats. In a TikTok video filmed aboard his campaign tour bus, Ossoff pretends to be making an online delivery order in order to send the message about his legislative priorities.
Hey, yeah, I'd like to place an order for pickup, please. It's John. Yeah, J as in jobs, O as in over 1.5 million Georgians have voted early in the runoff for U.S. Senate, and if you want to relieve student loan debt, save the environment, legalize marijuana, and increase the minimum wage to $15, you better vote now. And N is for New Civil Rights Act.
Ossoff faces off against Republican Senator David Perdue, and Reverend Raphael Warnock faces off against Republican Senator Kelly Loeffler on January 5th.
People use drugs in a whole bunch of different ways.
That's Queen Adesui, the policy manager of national affairs for the Drug Policy Alliance, speaking to WJLA about a drug decriminalization bill recently signed by the mayor of Washington, D.C.
People are more likely to do risky behavior when they have to hide from law enforcement, hide their drug use equipment from law enforcement. They're more likely to share it if it's not something that's being able to be distributed widely.
The measure not only decriminalizes the possession of paraphernalia for personal use, but also allows for possession of testing equipment for users and advocates to determine the purity and quality of illicit drugs.
The importance of drug paraphernalia decrim broadly is the access to harm reduction supplies around smoking and snorting, which, you know, it seriously increases the risk of people who use drugs around COVID-19 because of the way it spreads.
The Attorney General in Mississippi is defending his state's new marijuana amendment from a court challenge. In Mississippi, the new medical marijuana law is being challenged by the mayor of Madison on procedural grounds. Under Mississippi law, quote, signatures of the qualified electors from any congressional district shall not exceed 1/5 of the total number of signatures required to qualify an initiative petition for placement upon the ballot, end quote. That law was written when Mississippi had 5 congressional districts. Since reapportionment, it is down to 4, making it impossible for the districts to each supply a limit of 20% of the required signatures, while garnering 100% of the signatures needed statewide. The Attorney General argues that while Mississippi is down to 4 districts for congressional elections, the state still recognizes 5 districts under state law, which would be the guiding principle for determining signature thresholds. Meanwhile, in South Dakota, Marijuana Moment also reports that the Attorney General there is defending the state's new marijuana legalization in court. Pennington County Sheriff Kevin Tom and State Highway Patrol Superintendent Colonel Rick Miller are claiming that the recreational marijuana violates a single subject rule for ballot initiatives. Quote, it is inconsequential that Amendment A deals with recreational marijuana, medical marijuana, and hemp separately, the Attorney General writes to the court. They are all part of the same group or class, cannabis. In other words, cannabis is cannabis is cannabis, just like corn is corn is corn, end quote. In a separate brief to the court, South Dakotans for Better Marijuana Laws, which ran the campaign to pass the legalization measure, argued that as state officials, the two law enforcement officials are precluded from suing in the first place.
I think society's views around marijuana has changed to a certain extent.
That's NBA Commissioner Adam Silver speaking to NBC's Today Show about extending the association's temporary reprieve on testing for inactive marijuana metabolites in the urine of their professional basketball players.
We decided that given all the things that were happening in society, given all the pressures and stress that players were under, that we didn't need to act as big brother right now.
It has long been common knowledge that a majority of NBA players use marijuana, a number estimated to be as high as 60% of players, according to retired New York Knicks player Charles Oakley. In rejecting a lawsuit challenging the statewide limit on licenses, Cole County Circuit Judge Patricia Joyce ruled that Missouri's regulations are appropriate and do not violate the state constitution's right to farm, reports the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Missouri has a set limit of 192 licenses for dispensaries, 24 for each congressional district. There have been well over 1,100 dispensary applications filed, leading some to file suit to repeal that limit. Others among the 500 companies seeking to grow medical cannabis have filed suit over the limit of 60 statewide cultivation facilities, complaining that runs afoul of the state's right to farm laws. Bordered by two legal states and one medical one, the governor of Wisconsin, Democrat Tony Evers, is criticizing Republican lawmakers for thwarting progress on marijuana reform. Speaking to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the governor said that adult use legalization was on the table, despite facing opposition from the legislature over more modest cannabis proposals in the past. Marijuana Moment reports that Evers criticized the legislature for failing to act on the more incremental reforms at the beginning of the year, citing overwhelming public support for medical cannabis legalization.
Well, when more than 80% of our state supports medical marijuana, and elected officials can ignore those numbers without consequence, folks, something's wrong.
While Wisconsin does allow for medical use of low THC CBD oil, possession of even 1 gram of marijuana is a misdemeanor with up to 6 months in jail, and cultivating even one cannabis plant is a felony worthy of 3.5 years in prison. The changing dynamics regarding marijuana politics have caused two Rhode Island centrist Democrats to come around to supporting marijuana legalization. Senate President Dominic Ruggiero and Majority Leader Michael McCaffrey spoke with the Providence Journal on Monday. Ruggiero, who last year said, quote, "If we can't handle medical marijuana, there is no way we can enforce the laws for legalization," end quote, has now put McCaffrey in charge of fleshing out a potential recreational marijuana program. While Governor Gina Raimondo has proposed creating state-controlled marijuana stores, similar to New Hampshire's liquor store model, McCaffrey would rather see a system of private stores similar to what exists in Massachusetts.
There are a couple of good reasons why someone might want to hold on to their medical marijuana card.
Arizona normal attorney Tom Dean spoke with KTAR News on Wednesday about the details of Arizona's new marijuana legalization under Prop 207, which went into effect earlier this month, and how the state's decade-long medical marijuana program provides better protection of tokers' rights.
It does have very strong protections against the government interfering with custody or visitation or with children. If you're employed by someone who has drug testing, there are no protections in 207. So if you test positive for THC at work, you can be fired for that. If you're a medical marijuana patient, however, you cannot. There's very strong protection.
Dean explained how existing medical marijuana dispensaries will be the first to receive recreational sales licenses sometime around the end of March. Until then, medical marijuana patients are the only ones with legal access to marijuana. The House Select Committee on Racial Justice of the Minnesota Legislature is recommending the end of adult marijuana prohibition as a step toward addressing systemic racism, according to Marijuana Moment. In order to, quote, "address disproportionately harmful impacts on communities of color," end quote, in the legal system, the legislature should pursue cannabis decriminalization and clearing the records of those convicted on nonviolent marijuana offenses, the report states. To that end, panel members are calling for their recommendation to be at the center of the legislature's work to put together a budget in fiscal year 2021, House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler, Democrat, said in a press release. Winkler filed a bill earlier this year to fully legalize marijuana in Minnesota, describing it as the best in the country, in part because it would have prioritized social equity in the industry. It did not move in the legislature, however. According to an indictment in Massachusetts, a small-town mayor is accused of accepting, quote, "a variety of bribes, including cash, more than a dozen pounds of marijuana, and a Batman Rolex watch worth up to $12,000," end quote, in exchange for granting local marijuana licenses. The case of Mayor Jaciel Correa is featured in a Politico story about how state marijuana legalization became a boon for corruption. In the mayor's town of Fall River, with its population of roughly 90,000, the cost of obtaining a letter of local approval from Korea's city hall was anywhere from $100,000 to $250,000 in bribes, according to the indictment. According to researchers at Whitney Economics, by 2025, only 1/6 of the hemp crops planted in the U.S. will be harvested for CBD uses, while crops planted as grain feed for livestock should increase to 2/3 of all U.S. hemp production. Roughly 500,000 acres of hemp are farmed in the U.S., down about 27,000 acres from 2019, even as the number of farmers increased. Without clear regulations on hemp products from the FDA and lacking the insurance options farmers of other crops enjoy, some have scaled back or ended their hemp farming due to harvesting costs. Currently, over 4 out of 5 hemp plants are grown for CBD uses, and just 1 in 8 is grown for animal feed. That's your cannabis headline news for the week ending January 1st, 2021. I'm Russ Belville. All right, that alarm means that it's the first 4:20 p.m. in the Mountain Time Zone in the year 2021. That means also that we've got to take a break for our union-mandated safety meeting. Hope everything's safe where you're at. Smoke them if you got them. We'll be right back with our tribute to the activists we lost in 2020 right after these messages.
And now, a brief glimpse into the future.
All right, Mr. Green, we've gotten great responses from your references. They all really seem to love you. Your experience is certainly a fit for the position.
Thank you, sir.
We only have one thing left to get out of the way. Just a formality, really.
What's that, sir?
Well, look, don't read too much into it. We really only do it to make the pencil pushers happy. We already know you're going to be great for this job.
Okay.
We got to have you take a drug test.
Oh, I see. Where will I have to go?
Oh, well, we can take care of that right here.
Really?
Oh, yes, yes. No bother. Won't take a minute.
Okay.
All right, so here's your test. Just fill out the... Good
what?
God, man!
Huh?
Put that thing away!
I'm sorry. You needed a urine sample?
A urine sample? What? Ew, gross. No. No, you're applying to work at the counter of America's first legal recreational drug dispensary. We need to test your knowledge of various drugs.
Got it.
This has been a look into the future.
Welcome back, everyone. You know, 2020 was probably the most successful year in marijuana law reform history. There sure was a lot of good news this last year, but there was also some bad news as we lost a few of our brave marijuana activists who passed away during the year 2020. First of which I can think of would be Montgomery Ball, although I never knew him by that name. To me, he was just subcool. A lot of you knew Subcool out there. I first met him at one of the many cannabis cups that I covered in California. He was working his booth there at Team Green Avenger. That was the genetics company he had founded with his ex-wife, Ms. Jill. He also had Subcool Seeds. He authored a number of cannabis horticulture books, including Dank. He was the host of the popular Weed Nerd show on YouTube as well. Subcool was always the friendliest guy, always smiling. Every time I had a chance to interview him, he was just more than willing to join me on the air. He was very adept at explaining complex cannabis cultivation techniques to newbies, novices like myself, or he could sit there and chat with the greatest experts in the field. Subcool died in February due to the rare genetic condition he suffered that contributed to his COPD. Ironic that one of our nation's all-time greatest marijuana growers couldn't even smoke his own creations. Here's my interview with Subcool at the 2011 High Times San Francisco Medical Cannabis Cup. All right, we've got Subcool here, legendary cannabis breeder and man about town. How you doing?
You know, I'm really good. I got to say, it's a really one of the best cups I've been to.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to let everybody know that because, you know, in the past, not always has it been run well. But I got to tell you, man, this thing's run slick, easy. It was well put together for all the vendors. We got in and out easy.
Yeah. We've got a number of chatters here watching us live, you know, all across the country. And Damon was wanting to know what he thought the outstanding or standout strain was this year. What do you think?
Well, you know, the best thing I've smoked here today is the Jelly Bean Candy that I brought.
Yeah.
We didn't enter it into the cup. We just brought
There's applause from the crowd.
We just brought, I think he just smoked some. So, but we didn't enter this year. We just thought it would be better to come and get everybody high and, you know, just be real nice. You know, we're just giving books away, and we made these cool little paper rolling trays, and we're giving 10,000 of those away, and we're signing books and stuff. And everybody that comes out is, like these guys, gets ripped, because we're medicating six strains outside. We have Jack the Ripper, Jilly Bean, Plushberry. We have a little bit of Vortex, which won last year's cup.
Right.
Are you aware of that controversy?
The God's Pussy controversy?
Yes, the God's Pussy controversy.
I'm real aware.
Yeah.
But luckily, you know, we're not on FCC radio here.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, it worked out. You know, the guys were so cool, and they were humble. They weren't trying to start any shit, and they did offend a lot of people. But the guy told me, he goes, we didn't think we'd win, and we were just goofing around. You know, like, you know? And
nobody
and,
told us we'd win the damn thing.
Exactly. And but, you know, my take on that, and this is going to sound salesy, but I mean this because it touched me this way. You know, some kid bought a pack of my genetics, grew them out, and won the cup. So I would say I'm doing my job.
That ain't so bad. And, you know, we were watching the cultivation seminar yesterday, and Danny was up, Jorge Cervantes, Adam Dunn. They're all talking about needing to go back to seed, go back to, you know, everybody's been cloning. Tell folks why that's so important to you.
Well, here,
aside from just the business aspect, obviously.
You know, it's really not. If you guys, anybody that's ever met me, they know that. I mean, we give seeds to anybody that's fought in the war, anybody that's hurt, anybody that's down on their luck.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be a pretty big piece of shit if, you know, I got an email from some vet that is all screwed up. And you can tell because of the technical language, you know.
Sure.
That if I didn't give him genetics, I mean, that would just be cruel. So we use the fact that we are a good company to do that. But on the clone issue, the first thing is the mislabeling. You know, I have seen California Orange labeled as train wreck. I mean, the common person that doesn't see marijuana all day like we do, I mean, we're actually involved in business, and we see 50 to 60 strains a month all the time. We see them over and over and over. I can pick OG Kush out. You know, yep, that's OG Kush. You know?
Yeah.
People walk up to me and hand me jars, and so I have that ability just like anybody with a job learns, you know, they get better at it. Okay, so there's mismanagement clones. So you go buy a bunch of clones, and you think you're going to get this clone that you're needing for your medication. Let's say you have anxiety, and you're looking for an indica, and you take it home and you grow it out, and it's not an indica, it's a sativa haze, and then you're bouncing off the damn walls, and so that's bad. But the main reason is that, in my opinion, is people are passing around mildew and mites. Mm-hmm. Mites are invisible to a non-skilled grower. Mildew is not only invisible, but it can be systemic in the plant.
Right.
You can actually infect a cutting and a line of cuttings with mildew, and then you bring them in. The other reason is, you know, who knows who made that selection? You know, was it someone with the passion that I have for selecting a cutting? Or was it someone cracking a 10-pack and seeds looking for a mom to make some clones to sell for $8 a piece? Mm-hmm. So when you crack your own seeds, you get to choose the type of medication that you need. We were just outside smoking both the orange Jilly Bean and the candy store Jilly Bean. One of them has a calming effect, and one of them makes you giggle. You know, it's according to what you really want out of life with strains. And I think that's why it's so important. And if I can speak just a little bit, I am so proud to see, you know, my friends California Connection and all the other seed companies like DNA out here representing, bringing genetics to the people, even though it's a dangerous climate and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we do it because all day long people keep coming up to me, shaking my hand and thanking me and telling me I'm the man. Because of some genetics they grew out. And whether they have Crohn's disease or MS, they've learned to make my tincture, you know.
Yeah.
I want you guys all to taste the tincture, by the way. I brought three different kinds, lemon, orange, and Apollo rocket fuel, which is definitely not for nighttime. Put a little bit bad in your coffee. But, you know, tinctures are a real way to heal without smoking. You know, I am a smoker, and you're an idiot if you don't think that a lifetime of smoking is good for you. It's just not.
No.
So everything in moderation is what your mom
said.
That's
right. Breathing any sort of burning vegetable matters, not on the list of healthy things to do.
It's just not. So, you know, I smoke
campfire.
Pot. I was just outside smoking pot. But I understand that it is going to do something to me in the long run. And so tinctures are a really good way to get by that. I'll share my million-dollar idea with everybody online. We haven't done it yet, but if you took like some Jilly Bean tincture and you were smart, you could make jelly beans.
Yeah.
I would buy some, and
Jelly Belly.
I bet everybody in this room would buy some orange tincture
jelly jelly beans.
Yeah.
So yeah, I want some candy maker to do that for me.
All right, candy makers out there, you're on notice. Subcool here wants you to make the hemp Jelly Belly.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
You know, with the medical industry, you know, growing like it is, California, Colorado, and people and patients having much more selection and ability to discern what they're looking for, we see like Project CBD and a lot of these guys that are talking about now breeding more for CBD, and how in the past, since we've always been breeding to get high, we've bred out CBD. What are you doing along those lines? Are you trying to get into more different cannabinoid ratios and contents there in your strains?
What a good question.
Thank you. I do this for a living.
We have just discovered in the last 6 months that one of our strains, Jack the Ripper, has a high percentage of THCV. Now, THCV is tetrahydrocannabinol. And I'm going to get just a little technical here, but I'm just repeating what I read, okay?
So,
basically, THC works on the CB1 receptor, and that's what is the psychoactive effect. It's what makes us high or paranoid or sleepy or stony or whatever. And then we have other cannabinoid acids that react on the CB2 receptor. Now, the CB2 receptor is where all of our autoimmune controls are.
Breathing, okay? Homeostasis, temperature.
Exactly. Now, THC will not cause any respiratory problems, but there's other problems, you know, mental things when you're acting on the CB1 receptor. I like to say it like this. You know, you don't want your grandma to be smoking my Vortex for her first medical experience.
No.
Because she's probably not going to have a second
That's right.
With cannabis. So this THCV seems to act as not only a regulator to the CB1 receptor, so it kind of throttles the effect.
Mm-hmm.
Which does two things. It extends the pain-killing experience when medicating on it. The other thing that we were really excited about is one sample, not grown by me, grown by a grower down in Colorado, came in with the 5% THCV with cannabinoid total ratio of 26%. So, yeah, I bred something that's 26% in the bud stage.
Wow.
So that's just proud on a pothead level, you know.
Yeah.
Like, that's just cool, you know. But on the medical level, we searched even further, and we found out that this THCV has ramifications with Parkinson's disease. And if Big Pharma doesn't fucking stifle us and crush us, and the stupid goddamn U.S. government doesn't roll over all these wonderful plants and cures, we may just find the cure for some things like Parkinson's disease.
Yeah. Cure UK's got a question here.
GW Pharmaceuticals are actually working on THCV now for Crohn's disease.
Oh my.
And you know, the problem with all of the big companies, I have nothing against big or money or any of that stuff. It's simply that it's not needed. We can grow our own plants. We can grow our own strawberries. We can grow our own watermelon. We can grow our own corn. There's no reason that we can't grow our own medicine in the backyard.
Absolutely. And I think that's part of what there's that fear factor with the medical establishment is, I've often compared it to when Martin Luther nailed the Protestant Reformation up on the church wall and said, we don't need to go to a priest to get to God, we can do it ourselves. We don't need to go to a guy in a white coat to get our health. We can grow it ourselves.
Exactly, and you know, the reason that is, and we all know this, is because the insurance companies need to be involved and money needs to be made. And George Cervantes, George Cervantes is like one of the nicest people in the world. I don't know if everybody is aware of that. He's like the sweetest guy. He's so cool. Me and my wife, Miss Jill, love him so much. But you know, he likes to tell people, you can grow a pound of marijuana outdoors for $30.
Yeah.
And you know, out of a pound of oil, we can make, a pound of weed, we can make two healing doses of Rick Simpson's oil. And you know, this is something that actually has been proven, certainly much more than ghost, okay?
Yeah.
You know, certainly we have more proof that Rick Simpson's oil cures cancer than we have proof that there's paranormal.
Yet there's a whole TV network dedicated to hunting ghosts.
You're so with me. Okay, thank you. I didn't know if you were getting with me on that. Okay. So, but yet everybody's ignoring it. This is goddamn farmer up in Canada that's figured out how to cure cancer with hemp oil, and people are just like, duh, I don't get it. And I mean, I've personally been involved with people that I have a friend that grows outdoors that gives away 140 pounds of marijuana a year. He turns roughly half of it into Rick Simpson's oil, the other half into tincture. The guy's got Bell's palsy,
mm-hmm.
So he'll go into a seizure while he's making something to cure somebody else. The guy literally puts his own health at risk every year to do this. He puts up with a lot of shit. He gets all stressed out by the time it's all over. People take advantage of him, and he's doing it for 19 years up in Oregon.
Yeah.
But he gives this Rick Simpson's oil to people that have been to the doctor that have been told, you are going to die.
Yeah.
And I've partied with these fucking people, so they didn't die. And, you know, it just kind of pisses me off that, yeah. that you know, can I go off with a real quick story?
Yeah, go right ahead.
I went to the doctor the other day because I am having some anxiety issues because... Whatever, I'm 50 years old and I have a lot going on. My kids are driving me crazy.
And the federal government doesn't like what you do.
Thank you.
That's always a little stress-inducing.
Yeah, so that's going on. So I go to the doctor and I talk to him for a while, and we talk about cannabis a little bit. I mention sativas, and he looks at me like I'm, you know, he has no idea. And I just got right on his shit. I went out to my car, and I got my dank book, and I gave it to him. I autographed it and gave it to him. And I said, look, 40 million people in this country smoke marijuana. I'm just the only guy that's ever came into your office and said, I smoke marijuana.
Right.
You know? And yet you're still my doctor, and I still need your help to figure out what's going on in my life, mm-hmm. you know? And you don't even know the difference between a sativa and an indica. It just didn't even make any sense.
Right.
And so... I'm taking the proactive way of getting my doctor informed so he understands. And I actually got my doctor to say, it sounds like you might need to try some of those cushies you don't like so much.
Well, you know, you sound like now the herbal version of the pharmaceutical rep that goes in and wines and dines the doctors and hands them all the free samples and stuff. I can see Subcool going and say, here's a couple samples of this and this and this. You need to give these out. Well, that's the world we need to have.
I just don't see how a doctor can treat the populace when the populace... are us, and we are potheads.
Yeah, man, that's so cool. Thank you so much, man. Take it easy. Have a good cup.
Thank you very much.
Another notable passing in 2020 is the youngest of our marijuana activists to make the list, Charlotte Feige. Back in 2013, America met her when she was just 6 years old. She's the little girl who suffered from Dravet syndrome, that rare childhood epilepsy. She was featured on the CNN special Weed with Dr. Sanjay Gupta, who was so amazed at her recovery using CBD oil that he changed his tune on medical marijuana, led him to recant all the anti-medical marijuana screeds he'd published in the past. And after Dr. Gupta's specials featuring Charlotte gained massive national attention, the movement to legalize CBD oil for epilepsy was on. It just took off. In 2014, Utah of all states, became the first state to legalize these low THC CBD oils to treat childhood epilepsy. And within the next 2 years, 17 states, mostly in the South and the Midwest, conservative states that had no form of medical marijuana whatsoever, had gone on to legalize low THC CBD oil for kids. So it's safe to say that this one little girl's story may have changed more hearts, minds, and laws on medical marijuana than any other individual. She passed away in April at the age of 13 due to a seizure that brought on a cardiac arrest. Rest in peace, Charlotte. As summer came around, we began losing more members of the cannabis community. One devastating loss was the death of Dr. Lester Grinspoon, who passed away the day after his 92nd birthday. And one of the greatest blessings of my life is to have the opportunity to have interviewed Dr. Grinspoon on a number of occasions and even shared a joint with him at Boston Common at the Boston Freedom Rally. He was an emeritus psychiatry professor at Harvard University, and in the late 1950s, he was opposed to marijuana use. He thought it was bad for your brain, bad for your mind. But he couldn't reconcile that belief with the knowledge that his friend, the brilliant Dr. Carl Sagan, was a regular cannabis consumer. In fact, he wrote an essay, Carl Sagan did, for Lester that was published under the pseudonym Mr. X, where he explained how cannabis helped expand his consciousness. Well, to prove Carl Sagan wrong, that marijuana smoking was harmful, Dr. Lester Grinspoon started studying the literature on marijuana, and he discovered that he'd been misled about its actual benefits and harms. He was so turned around on the issue that he went and put his research into a book, the book Marijuana Reconsidered, that was published in 1971, which is one of the turning points in American marijuana reform, one of the books that helped to turn people on to rediscovering the medical uses of cannabis. Dr. Grinspoon was a champion for legalization as well. He served on the board of directors for Normal for years. He also wrote books on amphetamines and cocaine and psychedelics throughout the 70s and 80s, and then returned to the subject of medical marijuana in 1997's Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine. Here's an interview that I did with Dr. Lester Grinspoon back in 2009, discussing the progress of medical marijuana. Dr. Lester Grinspoon is an associate professor of psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School and also the author of several groundbreaking drug-related books, including Marijuana Reconsidered, Psychedelic Drugs Reconsidered, and Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine. He's been a longtime advocate for the medical use of marijuana, and he joins us today on the Daily Audio Stash to talk about a new online endeavor. So, Dr. Grinspoon, thank you, and it's our pleasure to have you here on the Stash.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you were one of the first physicians to take a look at the use of cannabis as medicine, you know, going back to your publishing of these books in the 1970s. What do you think about the progress that's been made on medical marijuana since you first began looking at the issue?
Oh, I think it's fantastic. I mean, there's no question now, medical marijuana is here to stay. And I don't want to get too far into that topic, but I must say that my major worry is in that area is not so much whether marijuana is now going to be accepted as a medicine. There's no question in my mind about that. But how to keep it, a people's medicine, herbal marijuana, and not to let the drug companies get away with trying to patent strains and make it... they can only be successful in producing cannabinoid analogs and other cannabinoid-based medicines for the most part in the shadow of this prohibition. That is to say, from our experience so far, if you take a patient who's used Marinol, Sativex, and a patient who has used both Marinol and herbal marijuana, it's a very rare patient who would say he prefers Marinol or Sativex to herbal marijuana.
Yeah.
In my experience, the patients who do are patients who are concerned about it not being legal. And they want to use a cannabinoid medicine, but not have to deal with the vagaries of the law.
Yeah.
But that's another story. What I really wanted to talk today about is something that I've become increasingly interested in. You know, when I first got started looking at marijuana in 1967. I did it because I was concerned that so many young people were using this foolishly, using this very dangerous medicine. And I believe that if I could write a reasonably objective paper, then perhaps some of them who would not believe what the government was saying about it would believe something that was clearly data-based. So I went into the Conway Library, the Harvard Medical School Library, and spent a lot of time reading everything I could get my hands on this, and then wrote a paper which was published in Scientific American, which made the point that marijuana, that I had been duped like just about every other citizen of the United States. But there was less excuse for me to have been brainwashed because I was trained in science and medicine.
Yeah,
and that the truly dangerous thing about marijuana was not any inherent psychopharmacological property of the drug or any other property of it, but rather the way we as a society were dealing with this. Problem, that is, by arresting at that time about 300,000 people. Of course, as you know, it's over 800,000 now. Mm-hmm. Sadly, I made the prediction in Marijuana Reconsidered, which was published by Harvard University Press in 1971, that there was no doubt that the that the prohibition would be gone within 10 years. In fact, Carl Sagan, who was a very close friend of mine, read the manuscript, and he said he liked the book a lot, but he said, Lester, aren't you being conservative? You think it's going to take 10 years? And that was in 1970. So
wow.
I'm not a very good prognosticator, but at any rate, it was that experience that helped me to begin to learn that it was not only a drug used for recreation, but it was a drug that had a very interesting past as a medicine, a past which in Western society began in about the mid-19th century and went on until two things happened. The Marijuana Tax Act of 1937, the first of the draconian legislation against marijuana, was passed. And before that, at about the turn of the century, both acetyl salicylic acid, or aspirin, and barbiturates were synthesized within 2 years of each other.
Hmm.
Now, so doctors now had, if somebody had pain, here, take a nice clean aspirin pill here.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have to get all messy with this here marijuana stuff. Although, of course, they didn't know about smoking, but they didn't know about what to prescribe as a dose either, because there were no bioassays that could tell them how much of any of the cannabinoids were in the let's say Tilden solution that they were. And that was used for pain, and then for sleep, it was used as a sleep medicine a lot. And a lot, well, now we had these various barbiturates coming out of the pharmaceutical companies, and so physicians were less interested. And so, because of the 1937 Act and the fact that we now had synthetic drugs like aspirin, of course, which was everybody believed as safe as marijuana, but of course about 1,000 to 2,000 people every year in this country lose their lives to aspirin.
Sure.
But nevertheless, physicians lost interest. The government was able to pass the 1937 marijuana tax, and while it did not explicitly exclude its use as a medicine, it made the paperwork so difficult that physicians, it just wasn't worth it to them. And medicine allowed itself to become quite ignorant about what this medicine could do. So it just went out of the pharmacopoeia and out of physicians' minds. But at any rate, in 1993, I wrote the book, Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine. And It's fair to say that is clearly established now. The only people who don't really understand that are the people in the U.S. government. But most other people do. But, you know, and for a while, I thought that here were the two major reasons why people use marijuana. One, because it can be a lot of fun. And two, it is a remarkable medicine. It's remarkably free of toxicity. It's very versatile. It can deal with a whole bunch of symptoms and syndromes. And three, one could imagine that once it's free of the prohibition tariff, which makes it so damned expensive, it will be much less expensive than the many conventional medicines that people will no longer use because they're more toxic for many things and less efficacious. And then, more recently, I've been thinking that there's a third category, recreation, medicine, and what I've come to call enhancement, that using marijuana can enhance one's personal experiences in a whole variety of areas. Now, everybody knows that how it enhances taste, so much so that people can eat some very ordinary meal and think of it as a culinary treat.
Yeah.
And many people are aware of the fact that it, many people, that is the people who use it, are aware of the fact that it can be an enhancer of the sexual experience and spiritual experiences and so forth. But I believe there are many other areas of enhancement, like creativity. People who write, for example, Carl Sagan clearly found it useful in his writing. Many other people have reported that. People, not only for producing the graphic arts, but people like myself who get more out of going to a museum if I've altered my state of consciousness a little bit in the way that that marijuana is capable of doing. In fact, Allen Ginsberg, who wrote in the Atlantic magazine, I believe it was, in the late 60s, about how he was having difficulty in really catching on to Cezanne. He knew that people, you know, regarded him as a very important artist of that time, and he never quite saw it. So he wrote about his experience of having a little grass before he went to the Museum of Modern Art in New York and looked at Cezanne. And of course, he writes so beautifully, and it was amazing to him how Cezanne came across as he never did before. And it wasn't just a dose-related phenomenon, because he asserts that what he learned, what he was able to internalize about Cezanne, stuck to his ribs. And Cezanne now is one of the artists whom he gets a great deal of pleasure out of. So I started this website called The Uses of Marijuana. It's www.marijuana-uses.com, in which I spent quite a bit of money advertising in magazines, and every one of the magazines took the ad, but The New Yorker refused to publish an ad which asked people who had significant experiences with cannabis to share in an essay with me what they thought it was doing for them, and started to put them together on this website. And now, you know, Carl Sagan's essay was there. Carl wrote it for my book, Marijuana Reconsidered, in late 1969, but we called it Mr. X. He didn't want, of course, his name known at that time. And many people, I've always been open about my use, but that's another area. Many people have put those essays up either anonymously or with a pseudonym, but there are a large number of essays there about many different ways in which people find marijuana enhances some aspect of their life in a very positive way. And recently I decided to add a blog to that, so that people, as of this week, can start... They can still submit essays. We're always open to essays. We don't take a lot of them, so many of them read like this. I'm 17 years old, and I use dope, and I think it's great. And you can publish this with my name. But the ones we publish, the ones I put up there, are thoughtful essays, which are pretty well written and articulated. I do very little editing of them. And the same will be true of the blog. In fact, some comments on the blog have already come up, and there are misspellings there, and you know, they go right to it, and I said, is there any way I can at least correct them? And my webmaster said, no, once they're up there, they're up there. But at any rate, so we are now accepting blogs and comments and what have you around that website. But I want to emphasize, we're still building up this collection of essays.
All right.
So that, in a nutshell,
yeah,
is what I'm up to on this.
Okay, well, the website is, like you mentioned, marijuana-uses.com, and we'll have a link to that up on our blog at stash.normal.org. We've also got Dr. Grinspoon's banner advertisement running in the Stash, so as you're reading down the posts, you'll probably see Dr. Grinspoon's smiling face and a link to the blog, so you can click on it and read it yourself. And they are still taking essays, essays on your uses of marijuana, how it has enhanced the effects in your life and your personal experience with it. Is there a way they submit those, Doctor, through an email or anything?
Yes, if they go to the website, marijuana-uses.com, there will be, I think the last block is, I forget what it's called, but it tells you how to reach me.
Great.
It gives my email address. And that's how the essays come in. And I respond to everybody. I don't take all the essays, but I do respond to them. And I expect now that some people who, you know, see an essay as a real tip, would love to have a paragraph or two about this. And that might be more appropriate to the blog, or some criticism of an essay or what have you. I mean, what I want to do is get a conversation going on, you know, so much of the attention is to, you know, how toxic is marijuana, how much fun is marijuana, how good it is the medicine. But I think too little attention has been paid to this very special capacity it has, namely to enhance a variety of experiences.
I agree, Dr. Grinspoon, and I'm glad you're taking those essays so that people can express themselves anonymously if they want to, or to put their name on it if they feel confident in stepping out like that. That's, I think, the best way we can fight this stupid prohibition and maybe get it overturned sometime,
you know,
in our lifetimes.
That's exactly how I feel, yeah. Russ. I, from the very beginning, said we're never going to get over this unless we feel that, you know, the people who hardworking, you know, people who just don't correspond to the propaganda stereotype, mm-hmm, of the lazy ne'er-do-well hippie person who just goes around smoking dope. You know, I think it's very much analogous to the homosexual situation. Mm-hmm. People started to come out of the closet a couple of decades ago, and I think that has done an awful lot to reduce homophobia in this, mm-hmm, country. Now, it's clear we're not where we've got to be eventually, but this past election showed us that we've come a long ways. And I think when people, that's why I would rather have people put their names to this, but I don't want that to be the reason. You know, I can certainly understand someone who doesn't want to do that and wants to be anonymous or use a pseudonym, but I think ultimately it's when enough people have made it clear to other people that they can use this, and like Michael Phelps won 14 yeah, medals.
Yeah,
he's not likely to write an essay, though.
I don't think so.
He might write a letter to the Kellogg Company, but not an essay from my website.
Maybe so. Well, Dr. Lester Grinspoon, like I mentioned, is a professor emeritus of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, also running the website marijuana-uses.com, and another great website, rxmarijuana.com, where you can get a lot of individual anecdotes about medical uses of marijuana. And of course, the groundbreaking books, Marijuana Reconsidered, Psychedelic Drugs Reconsidered, and Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine. If you haven't checked them out and read them, you need to. Dr. Grinspoon, thank you so much for helping us out here on The Stash today.
That's Dr. Lester Grinspoon in an interview that I conducted in 2009 for the Normal Daily Audio Stash. What an influence this man had on the world of marijuana. From his book, Marijuana Reconsidered, to Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine, it's truly a joy and an honor of my career to be able to interview this man. If you haven't picked up those books, you should do it. They're available on Amazon. You can find the links in my post at radicalrust.com. That's all the time we've got for Hour 1, the Russ Belbel Show. Coming up next hour, Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, available for subscribers to my Patreon page at patreon.com/radicalrust. From one here at the Idaho-Oregon border, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
You grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.